Welcome to episode 21 of The Inner Entrepreneur. My name is Paul Ryan. I'm a CEO, business owner, podcaster, and investor, but with a difference. While I've pursued a life of the entrepreneur and business owner, I've had a daily meditation practice for close on 40 years, and this has been my inner journey, my pursuit of self-awareness and peace of mind. At times, I've struggled to find a balance between these two paths until I realized they are one and the same. Both the road to self-fulfillment, to being all that we can be. In this podcast, we explore how you can live a life that is true to who you are while achieving success in the world. And in this episode, I share a conversation with Nick Hunno about the path of the inner entrepreneur. I hope you enjoy it and welcome to the show.
Paul, I'm really curious to hear more about your journey, and you know, we'll get into the inner entrepreneurship part, but just to start, I'd love to hear how you got into an entrepreneurial journey in the first place, and perhaps even, if you're open to sharing, how you feel your early years shaped what you do today.
Good question. I have to think about that, because it's a long time since I got on the entrepreneurial journey. So that's one of the advantages or disadvantages of age. It's a long time ago. I always wanted to be in business. Both my parents had their own business when I was very, very young. And then my mother closed down her business just to look after the family. And my father had his own business. They were small businesses, but I just grew up in a household where we talked business around the dinner table. And so I was always fascinated by business. Also, honestly, I noticed that we possibly had a little more than some other people. I'm not saying we were rich by any means, but I noticed certainly back in Ireland, this probably would have been the 70s in Ireland. And I noticed that a lot of people may be struggling financially, and I noticed we just had a little bit more. So I suppose all those things were just registering in my brain that if you want to be a little more financially comfortable, building a business is a good way to do that. And also I remember very interestingly where we lived and where my father still lives. So my father would describe himself as an uneducated man. To our left was a school teacher, and to our right was an engineer, and then the next door up was a psychiatrist. So we were surrounded by these very highly educated people. But the one thing I observed was that, and this is purely superficial, but they drove different quality of cars to my father. They all had old cars parked in the driveway, and we had two new cars parked in the driveway. And I just knew from my mother speaking to the other mothers that we just had a little bit more. So a lot of things were resonating with me. One is, it's probably a good idea to go and try and generate your own income. And secondly, education does not equal income. Where a lot of people will say, you know, get a good education. And by the way, I'm not anti-education, but it's just I learned at that point in time that education does not equal success and wealth in the material world. So at an early age, all of those things were just resonating with me.
Yeah, absolutely. I really resonate with that. Sometimes how we sort of assume that education is related to wealth, but not necessarily. And sometimes it's almost the antithesis, or kind of it's, I feel too much education can also be kind of a hurdle. I'd love to hear, Paul, did your parents have some kind of a relationship to their inner world, like their inner work? Like, was it through faith or some kind of emotional processing, or how connected do you feel they were with what was happening on the inside?
The question I probably haven't thought too much about. I would certainly say, I mean, my mother passed away about 15 years ago, but I would certainly say that she very much brought us up to connect to ourselves, and not so much so in a spiritual way or a religious way, or just have confidence in ourselves and just have dependence in ourselves. My father just very much demonstrated that independence in the work he did. So there wouldn't have been a whole lot of talk about the inner world. That said, So when I was about 18 years of age, maybe 17, 18 years of age, and my father at the time was running a small business, and running a small business is very stressful, at least can be very stressful. He was experiencing a lot of stress, and he saw this lady on TV, and I've since found a clip on YouTube of what he actually saw. But he saw this lady on TV from a thing called the Silver Method of Mind Control. It's now just called Silver Method. And she was explaining about how you could connect through meditation and deal with stress and all of these things. And he saw this lady on what we call the Late Late Show, which is a big late night TV show in Ireland. And he just, it clearly resonated with him. And he went and he did the silver training. He actually took some personal tuition. And then he came back and he was so impressed with us that he sent myself and my brother and my sister, and he paid for us to go and do 2 full weekends with these people. So at that stage, we were exploring meditation, all of these philosophies. So at that stage in my life, it wouldn't have been a conversation I had with my father. It wouldn't have been evident. But looking back, there was obviously something in him, some searching. And certainly now, he's now 87 years of age. And I would say certainly in recent years and conversations with him, there is certainly, he's a religious man. And I wouldn't describe myself as a religious man. But certainly we would read some similar spiritual books and we could discuss them. So we're in different places, we're different people, but there certainly is a spiritual search going on in him. I can see that. So that must have influenced me some degree. But certainly when I did the Silver Method, I discovered meditation, and that was something I'd been searching for. So I now had the 2 influences, and maybe I can thank my father for both of those, because he introduced me to entrepreneurship and introduced me to meditation, and both of those literally became the bedrock of the rest of my life.
Yeah, that's beautiful. I love how he opened the door to both of those worlds, which of course are, you know, not completely separate, right? There's an overlap, and one can inform another. And for me, it was kind of different. I mean, my mother definitely brought the more spiritual, psychological side, and my father was much more on the kind of business, entrepreneurial side. And I think that's kind of generally more traditional. But I'd love to hear, I mean, when you mentioned that training that you did, or that experience, would you say that was the catalyst into your inner journey? And how did it evolve from there?
It wasn't the catalyst to my inner journey. When I was 17, which would have been my last year in school, I've shared the story in a number of different places, but I was in a Christian Brothers school, which was a religious school. And so it was a group of about 30 teenage boys in this room. And one of our teachers didn't turn up one morning. So you can imagine, there's 30 teenage boys in this room and the teacher hasn't arrived. So you just picture the scene. This is absolutely chaos. And there's just, you can imagine, a chaotic room. And as we're standing in this chaotic room, the door bursts open, and I can still picture this tall, long black streak of misery, which was the sort of Christian Brothers wore these long dark robes. And my memory of the Christian Brothers going back, you know, almost 45 years ago, is they were tough disciplinarians. So this tall streak of misery bursts into the room and roars at us to keep quiet. When a Christian brother roars you to keep quiet, you normally keep quiet because you know trouble is coming. And he storms to the top of the room. And I remember to this day this feeling of dread, because you think, I mean, there's trouble coming now. This is not going to end well. And corporal punishment was not something that these guys were afraid of at all. So we didn't know what was coming down the road with this young Christian brother. So he storms to the top of the room and quite severely tells us all to be quiet. And we obey. But then he tells us to close our eyes. We go, okay. So I can remember sitting in the corner of the room beside the window, the heater beside me. So I was in a comfortable position in the room. And he tells us to close our eyes. I close my eyes. And what he takes us through then is a guided meditation for about 15 or 20 minutes. Now, I don't believe I'd ever heard the word meditation. I just had no idea what was going on. But he took us through this guided meditation. And for me, that was probably the first deeply spiritual experience I had, because the energy I felt flowing through my mind, it was like someone had soaked me into a beautiful warm bath, and this feeling came of deep relaxation, this deep peace flowed right over my body. I had absolutely no idea what was going on, but I knew I was experiencing something remarkable. When he brought us out of the meditation, I don't remember much after that, but I remember walking home and knowing that I just experienced something absolutely incredible, and I wanted to not only experience it again, but I wanted to live in this place, whatever that felt like, that's how I wanted to feel for the rest of my life. I went home and went to my room, and I tried to get there again, and I couldn't. I had no idea how to reconnect to that place, and I tried on a number of occasions to get back there again, and I just didn't have the skills or the tools to get there. But in the back of my mind, I was still searching for it. So a year or so later, when my father sent me on the Silver Mind Control method, and they started teaching us how to meditate through guided visualizations, reconnected with that place, and I knew I'd found home. And it wasn't an introduction, it was a reconnection. And I began to learn how to get back into that deeply peaceful inner state, that meditative place. And that is something, I mean, that is 40 years ago now. And I've probably meditated every single day since then. I've traveled all over the world. I've been to India. And meditation has just been a huge part of my life ever since. But that experience was a trigger. And often when I speak to people who struggle with meditation, I think I was very, very fortunate, because the first time I tried it, even though I didn't know what I was doing, I had this blissful experience. So I knew what I was searching for from there on in.
Yeah, beautiful. That's incredible to hear how consistent also this practice has been for you. I mean, there's definitely, like, similarly with investing, right? There's the compounding effect almost with, you know, the more regularly you meditate or create the space for contemplation, the deeper you go and the more connected you can be. Paul, I'd love to hear your perspective on, you know, having had this very long entrepreneurial journey, and also having been in spirituality or kind of on this inner journey for a long time also. How do you feel spirituality or this contemplative side of you, these contemplative pursuits, have helped you as an entrepreneur? And what have you seen in terms of how differently you began to do business or manage your business or grow it? Would love to hear more about that.
It struck me when you said about meditation was like compounding in the investing world. And I have a few things about that description. Firstly, is that you've described meditation in a very practical way, talking about compounding as opposed to in a mystical way. Now, I view meditation as both practical and mystical, in that I have many what I might describe as mystical spiritual experience in meditation. But we all know now the neuroscience of meditation and how you are literally training your brain to be calm. So there's a science behind it. And that science says, like doing anything, like lifting weights in the gym, you will continually become stronger and better if you do something, because your brain is rewiring and it's learning to fire off differently. And the more time you spend in a calm state, the more time you'll become, the more you'll become calm, and the more it'll become something natural, just in quiet, because it trains the brain. But if you want to link that to the more practical side of business and investing, I'm a very keen investor. I advise people never to get me into the topic of meditation and never to get me in topic of investment, because I just won't shut up and they'll be sorry. conversation. But here's what I'm a very simple investor, and here's what I've learned over several decades in investing, and mostly from making a huge amount of mistakes. Is to me, investing is a very simple process, and I'm a very long-term investor. But if you watch the stock markets, over the last maybe month or so, we have hit a number of all-time highs. Now, if you have a sizable investment account, those all-time highs can be very exciting because you've made a lot of money. And now I have made a point of, I look at the charts so I can tell you where the S&P 500 is moving to, but I make a point of not looking at my own account. The minimum term I'm investing for is normally about 15 years. So the soonest I have a number of different investment accounts, but the one that I'm likely to cash in soonest is maybe 10 years, maybe depending on how it grows. That's probably soonest. And so my conversation with Chuck recently was, I said to him, if we decide that in 10 years time we're going to go skydiving, and we're hoping it's a good day, and we're going to meet up in 10 years time and go skydiving, that we're not discussing the weather today or the weather tomorrow, like it's irrelevant. What we want is good weather on the day we go skydiving in 10 years time, and we're not thinking about the weather today, so we don't worry about it. And so from that point in time, I'm invested for at least a decade. What do I care about where the market's at today? And that what do I care has to be both sides, by the way. It means I'm not going to get excited by the fact that we hit an all-time high this week, but I'm also not going to be devastated when I see the market dipping down. Now, that's very, very logical. And particularly on Twitter, there's so many people will give you that logic. I wonder how many of the people expressing that logic are actually investors or if they're just talkers. So let me tell you, when you have a sizable investment account and it drops significantly or rises significantly, that triggers your emotions, and I don't care who you are. And it's very hard not to react to that. So it's very hard. It's very easy to trade on paper, and it's difficult to invest and trade with real life money. And meditation, that sense of calm is the best thing to do, because it has served me extremely well, because what it has allowed me to do is to look at how I invest and make simple decisions and just go, this is how I invest. I'm invested for a decade. And, some days the markets are going to look great and some days they're not going to. And I can't buy into that. I have to remain in a calm state and just remind myself, this is my investment process. It's just like saying, I don't care what the weather is like today. So from an investment point of view, I actually don't know if I could have that state of mind in relation to my investment account if I hadn't meditated for decades. And I would say very similarly on the business, just working actually on an episode that I'm going to do on the Inner Entrepreneur in the next couple of weeks called Never Act or Speak in Anger. And in business, that has helped me enormously to never react in anger. And a life of meditation has trained me how to do that, which is not saying that it's easy, because anger is a natural human emotion, but it has served me very well in many situations in business over the years, not to explode, not to overreact, and to always return to that place of calm before I make a decision. Many significant things have happened in my life, but I would not be where I am today professionally if I hadn't had the skills of meditation and of knowing where that place of calm is, where that center is, and certainly making sensible business decisions and sensible education investment decisions. But it's not the decision you make, it's where do you make those decisions from. And I've trained myself to return to a place of calm to make those decisions, which is not always saying that calm is easily available to me, but it's saying I recognize calm mind, I recognize disturbed mind. And when I'm in disturbed mind, and yes, I'm human like everyone else, so I go there. When I'm in disturbed mind, I have a discipline that says you don't act and you don't make decisions. You wait until you return to a calm mind. So enormous value meditation has been to me over the years.
I really enjoyed hearing about that. I mean, in my experience, as I guide entrepreneurs, it's always guiding them to a state of presence, because it doesn't even make sense to talk about strategy or tactics if you haven't accessed that inner calm, if you haven't created that inner space. And once you connect with that space, once you connect with that presence, then the insights are more readily available. You have a clearer picture of the next steps, or even emerging patterns, access to intuition. And it's been a similar experience to me. I mean, I studied finance, I did my CFA, I worked at Bloomberg for a while, and then I went down my own entrepreneurial journey. And when I started meditating, I noticed a really big shift in how I was managing my own portfolio. And I feel the emotional regulation is not something that's talked about often enough. And I was working on this idea a while ago on conscious investing, of bringing consciousness into the process, both externally in terms of finding companies that are quote unquote more conscious, right, or ethical, which is of course harder to measure, but also internally, right? The managing the inner state. And I'd love to hear, Paul, what has been your relationship like with intuition? Do you feel like meditation has helped you develop that?
I think meditation is an enormous part of intuition, because I think the voice of intuition is present in everyone. Everyone has it. The question is, are you listening to it, and how practiced are you with listening to that voice? And you won't hear anyone speaking unless you're listening, unless you shut up. So if I insist on talking continually through this conversation, I will never hear anything you have to say. I just won't. It's impossible, because if I don't shut up, you can't speak. And intuition to me is very, very simple. It's the same. There's a voice speaking inside of you. And if you're never quiet to listen to it, you just won't hear it. And you'll think, no, I'm not intuitive. No, you're not practiced in being intuitive. And meditation, if you do it regularly, is bringing you to that place of quiet. And from that place of quiet, your intuition grows. And to stress how valuable this is, and again, it only came to my mind because I was writing about it this morning, but if people ask me how valuable your intuition, your gut is, I can't actually put a price on that, but I can tell you that it saved me from financial ruin. And I literally mean financial ruin, because back about 2007, 2008, business was going extremely well. It was just before the global financial crash. And we were looking at our operations, looking at the space we had, and we realized we just need something so much bigger. And so we were looking at purchasing this premises not far from us, and it was going to cost me 5 million euro. I'd gotten all the good advice from my auditors, from everyone else, and yeah, you can afford this. Go and do this. This is a great thing for you. It's a great thing for the business. And I'd literally signed 90% of the paperwork. So this was all set up. This was ready to go. I was very excited about this. And it was a summer's evening, and I was driving home, and thankfully I live in a beautiful place in the countryside. And from where I'm standing, I can see the trees over the village, and I can look out to the ocean. So I pulled in, my gates open slowly, I pulled into the driveway, and as I pull into the driveway, I get this view of the ocean. And in that quiet moment, my instinct is talking to me, and I felt a tremendous sense of gratitude. And I looked at the life I had and thought, mate, you're very, very privileged. You live in a beautiful home. You have a beautiful wife who you love. You have three beautiful children. You have a wonderful life. What are you doing here? What's going on? And that was the voice of my intuition. And I sat there in the car for a moment, and I began to realize that the part of my mind that wanted to make this big investment for the business was chasing something that I didn't need. And I literally began to ask myself, what do you need? What more is it that you need that this will get you? And I realized that it actually was going to get me nothing, because that I want a bigger house, that I want a bigger car, that I want, that my ego want to look more successful to other people. So I realized there was nothing in this for me except an enormous risk. And the following morning, I drove into the office and I made a few phone calls, and I said, I annoyed a number of people who were not happy about it. And I said, guys, I'm out of this project. I'm not doing this. Now, the advantage of that moment of intuition was I then proceeded into the global financial crisis with zero debt, as opposed to millions of euro worth of debt. The financial crisis was difficult for me, as it was for everyone, but I would have maybe lost every single thing if I bought that premises for 5 million euro. And after it, when property prices crashed, and I mean, my business dropped by like 50, 60% during a period of time, and my properties absolutely went into negative equity. It was a very difficult time. And so many people said to me, you were so smart, you were so intuitive, you're so switched on to recognize that was coming and not buy that property. And I said, I knew nothing. I was on happy pills like everyone else. And I thought the global boom would go on forever. I had no intuition that it would stop. But something guided me not to invest in that premises, and that saved my financial life. So I cannot overly stress to anyone the wisdom, the guidance of intuition, of meditation. It is so powerful that it's what it's brought to me in my business life. I you know, we could stand here all day, and I don't think I could still tell you.
Yeah, it's there's something about intuition or that part of us, that inner voice that's able to pick up on things that are not quite yet clear to the mind, to our cognitive mind, to our logic. And it almost reminds me the beginning of our conversation when we were talking about education and how, you know, in education, often it's more knowledge, more information, more data, more logic, but we don't necessarily train our intuition. And actually, it's probably really the intuition that's one of the most important qualities in the entrepreneurial, but also investing journey. And yeah, out of curiosity, what kind of business and industry are you in, or were you in? Have you had just one business, or you tried, like you started several businesses?
And I have started several businesses. I have failed in more businesses than I have succeeded in. But that's often the way with people in business, is that you try lots of things. I have a business in the, all my businesses are based in Ireland. I have two businesses at the moment. They're both distribution business, and one distributes into the IT cabling infrastructure. So technology for IT and commercial industry. And the other business is an electrical distribution business. So that business distributes electrical cabling products, electrical test room. So they're both quite technical business, and they're both very much bricks and mortar businesses. Those two businesses have both been very successful for me for many, many, many decades. And at this point in time, I'm not really looking to get involved in any other businesses. I have started a number of other businesses that I've started and sold out of two businesses, and a number of other businesses just haven't worked. But look, the road to success is paved with failure. That's my experience, and that's been the experience of almost everyone. I'm still in business. I'm not actively involved in business anymore. I have a management team that run both businesses, and so my involvement is pretty much minimal at this stage. But still, for the moment, I'm still in business and I'm enjoying it.
Yeah, I'm curious. I mean, obviously you've tasted wealth in your life, and you know, and that brings certain comfort, that brings certain insights. And I'd be curious to hear, what do you feel brings you the fulfillment today?
The freedom to live life the way I'd like to live it. I mean, ultimately, that is the gift of wealth. And we all need different levels of wealth to achieve that. But the ultimate gift for me is to wake up in the morning and decide what I want to do today. Yesterday afternoon, myself and my wife went into Dublin City and went to the theatre. And we spent the afternoon in the theatre, and then we went for dinner in the evening. And as we arrived into Dublin City at about 1 o'clock, and we could see all the people hustling around in their business suits and out for lunch and grabbing sandwiches. And we were strolling in to spend the afternoon at the theatre. And going into theatre, we just spoke and we said, isn't this just a much more pleasant way to live, live your life? And by the way, I spent many decades in that business suit hustling around. So I'm not suggesting that it doesn't have to be done. But now I'm fortunate not to have to do that anymore. And I have no interest in doing it anymore. So I love exploring spirituality. I love exploring the spiritual side of success. And I love these conversations. And I'm fortunate to have lots of friends that I get to have these conversations with. So at the moment, I'm just pursuing my passion and selfishly doing the stuff I want to do while overseeing and taking good care of my business, and while paying good attention to my investments and continually educating myself on both.
Yeah, the freedom to live your life the way that feels right, or the way that you want to. It's really beautiful. And there's, of course, a price to pay for that also, right? You also worked your way there, and you know, and there was failure and there were struggles along the way. But ultimately to find yourself in that position is very inspiring. And I'd love to know, what brings you to X and building your personal brand here? Do you feel there's a kind of mission that you're on? Is it just driven by curiosity and intuition?
During the early days Well, but if I go back about maybe 7 years ago or so, as I was at a point where I fully installed a management team in the business and I really didn't need to be in there anymore, but hadn't found what else I was going to do, I could have re-engaged in the business. I could have started another business, but none of those were appealing from the point of view of how I wanted to spend my time. Being a lifelong meditator, I thought, why don't I teach business people how to meditate? Wouldn't that be interesting? So I went and spent 18 months or so studying to be an MBSR instructor, which is mindfulness-based stress reduction, the Jon Kabat-Zinn teaching. So I spent a couple of years doing that, which I really enjoyed. And then at the end of it, I thought to myself, I'm just not interested in sitting in a room teaching people to meditate. I learned a lot from it. It wasn't something that I wanted to do. So okay, I said, well, okay, that's not what I'm going to do in my time. What will I do next? And so then I decided, well, how about coaching? So I found this course, Coactive Coaching, which I think was about 6 months long or something. And I did that for 6 months and it was super. I really enjoyed it, learned a lot about it. I made some good friends during that. And then when I got to the end of the coaching course, one of the ladies who had become good friends with, and still a good friend of mine called Pia, and she lives in Copenhagen, and she encouraged me to go and certify as a coach, which I didn't really want to do. But she said, come on, Paul, I'm doing it. Why don't you do it? You'd love it. So I signed up to certify as a coach. And when you certify as a coach, you have to take on like a dozen paying clients and you have to have them for X amount of period of time, through certain hours if you want to certify as a coach. So I went ahead, I did that, I did certification, I took on the clients, I thought, this is what I'll do. And it's fun for me to do it because I don't need to do it financially, but I'll do this because I can help people grow and develop in their lives. And I did that and I realized, I certified as a coach, but I thought, no, I don't, I just don't want to do this because I really don't want to have my restriction for whatever they're paying. I could charge, which is a couple hundred dollars an hour as a coach. I thought, no, I'm just not interested in having someone in my diary on a sunny day when I might want to get up and ride my bike around the beautiful Wicklow Mountains. I don't want to have that day ruined because I have to spend an hour with somebody who's given me a couple hundred euros. So I just, when I got to the end of that, no, I'm not doing coaching. And I kind of wrapped up with the clients I had and said, no, I'm not taking it on any clients. And again, my friend Pia had just done a course. I think it was Ship for 30. She said, why don't you join me on this and start writing for 30 days? And when she recommends something to me, I almost go, no. And she talks me into it. And then I get it and go, this is a wonderful thing to do. So I joined that and I started writing on Twitter. And it just flowed from there. And I just found that I probably have learned a lot in meditation and business over the past 40 years. And maybe have something to share. But also I noticed, particularly on Twitter, there's a lot of people talking about these things and actually have no experience of them. And I just thought, well, maybe I'll bring some real life practical experience. So that's what was led me into it. And then with a friend of mine last year, we decided we would set up a podcast. And I came up with this idea of the Inner Entrepreneur podcast. And now I just do it by myself. But it's they're all just fun projects. They're all just fun projects to me. And they let me continually explore my own interest. Interest is a bit of a mild word. Maybe obsession would be better. My own obsession with my spiritual growth, my personal development, and I just get to talk about it. I probably prefer talking, podcasting now than I do to the writing on Twitter. But I'm just exploring what I love to do. That's really the simple answer to what I'm doing.
Yeah, I resonate, and that experimentation also, and trying yourself in different contexts, and even today, right, being on the space, and I really recommend doing these spaces. I'd be curious to hear at the end what your experience will have been like, but yeah, it's also like the live format is really special, right? Because in a way, we're sharing this moment together, right? We're holding space for this moment to unfold as we speak. And with writing, I feel, or even recording videos, something can be missed sometimes, right? It's kind of recorded, it's already set, and then, you know, a person reads it somewhere. It could still be potent, but I just feel there's something quite special, and also using voice and just kind of trusting the stream of consciousness. So I really resonate with that. And have you ever thought of writing a book? Is that something that has come across your mind?
Yeah, I have thought of it, but I'm not sure of what I would say just yet. And it's funny, I was in a bookshop on Saturday, and my wife was doing some shopping, and I was rambling in the bookshop, and I said to myself, well, I just love bookshops for whatever reason. I said to myself, would I like to write a book? And I wouldn't say I like the hard work of writing a book, but I like the idea of it. I thought, would I like to write a book? And I think I may do at some stage, but I look at a lot of books in the bookshelf and they seem just to be rehashing old stuff I've heard before. And I don't want to do that. So if at some stage I'm inspired to write something that I feel is uniquely my voice or something I have to say that's worth saying, then yes, but not just for the sake of writing it. And I get DMs all the time, I'm sure you do as well, but people, you know, offering to promote my brand and get me clients and all this sort of stuff. And I kind of go, well, I don't have an interest in that. I'm not, you know, I don't want any clients. Thank you very much. I don't want you to set me up at any meetings. Thank you very much. And I don't want you to grow my brand. So I don't have a strategy that says I'll write a book to grow my brand, because at this point in time, I'm exploring, I'm writing for and podcasting to pursue my own interest. At some stage in the future, maybe I will go, I have something to say now and I want to put into a book, and then maybe I will. But I resonate with what you said about the spaces, because now that I'm doing solo podcasts, which, by the way, I enjoy, because the process for me is every week I have to come up with an idea, I have to think that through, I have to articulate it, and I have to communicate that in a way in a solo podcast that hopefully resonates with someone. And I enjoy that as a creative process, because it requires me to clarify my thinking. But the thing about the live conversation is that you don't get to do that. You just get to spar off each other. And something you say or a question you ask triggers something that I may not have thought to say otherwise. So, yeah, I agree. I love conversation around spirituality. I love conversation around business. And I just learn so much from that. So, yeah, it's good.
Yeah, I resonate. And likewise, I mean, for me, those two topics, and especially the intersection of the two, I don't know what it is about that, but I find just endlessly fascinating. Maybe also because paradoxically, sometimes people put them as not necessarily opposites, but kind of as two really disparate different fields. And yeah, Paul, I'd love to also just circle back to, you mentioned you have three sons, and I'd love to hear about just the journey that they're on and how they view what you're doing. And do you feel like you've also helped them create a connection with their inner world, or do you feel like they're exploring it on their own? And just, yeah, what has that been like for them?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I just always followed my own journey, and obviously they're very aware of my life of meditation, of my life of study, of my life of reflection, because they see that's how I live. And when you grow up, when you live a certain way, you experience yourself, you don't think it's different to how the rest of the world live. And then you open your eyes and you see how other people, how crazy other people's minds are, how crazy other people's lives are. And you begin to realize that maybe you've tapped into something. But your children grow up in that environment, and that's just the environment they're in. I have almost never encouraged my children to pursue that path or to pursue meditation, because all I've ever done is just had it in their presence. So I meditate in their presence as they're growing up, and I do all of these things and just let them see it and then decide when they get into the world and see if it suits them, as opposed to driving them down something. And a couple of years ago, I was out cycling. I'm a keen cyclist. I was cycling with a friend of mine. So my eldest son is 30, and my next one is 27, and the next one is 24. And so they're all adults. And I get on very well with them. We have a good time together. And about 2 years ago, so this friend whose kids are a little bit younger than mine, cycling one day, he said to me, Paul, how did you teach your sons self-confidence? How did you do that with your boys? And I hesitate for a moment, because I've never been asked the question before. And I said to him, why would I want to teach them self-confidence? I've never tried to teach them self-confidence. I said, what I've tried all their lives to do is teach them self-awareness. Because if you have self-awareness and if you guide them to connect with their inner selves, then confidence almost seems like superfluous. It's almost unnecessary. Because do I need to be confident to speak to you live today with how many people listening or will listen? And the answer is, I need to be confident if there's something false going on. If I'm going to pretend I'm something and not, well, then maybe I need to bolster that with confidence. But if I just come on with complete authenticity, speak my truth as I am, with no concern whether you approve, whether you like it, whether anyone approves or likes it or anything, I'm just being me, take it or leave it, then I have no need for confidence. So I think that's possibly what I shared with my sons. And I look at them now, and they're intelligent, they're capable, they're happy people. They're in relationships that are very healthy, mature relationships. And I see a lot of positive stuff in them. And if I've had an influence on that, that's a wonderful thing. But it's subliminal, I suppose, as opposed to deliberately trying teaching them. But someone asked me some time ago who I was writing to when I wrote on X and who I was speaking to when I did a podcast. And I realized, to some degree, I'm speaking to my children, not so much to my own sons, but to, so if I'm 58 and my sons are in their 20s, I'm speaking to people of that age who have a massive opportunity to really impact their lives in so many ways when you're in that magic period. And I'm speaking to people in that time of their lives who really have an opportunity to impact so many ways of their lives positively, if they take some responsibility for that, and if they follow the inner journey and connect themselves. So I don't, I can't even remember what the question was you asked me, but in relation to my sons, I'm very happy with how my sons have turned out, and it would be nice to think I've had some positive influence on them, but they're their own men at this stage.
Yeah, I was smiling when you shared that question about self-confidence, and I almost feel, I mean, I'm not a parent yet myself. I'd love to be one day. And I feel, you know, it's really through way of being and through presence and through being an example, embodying those qualities yourself as a father, that your sons have a role model in a way, right? Or just someone to learn from. It's not through the theoretical teachings or like a step-by-step framework. And I love what you said about self-awareness. I mean, the link with self-confidence or just acceptance of oneself as is incredibly strong for me also.
Well, who teaches self-awareness? I mean, I understand my friend's question, but I mean, who raises their children and teaches them that there's, you know, that there's an inner being that you can connect to that will guide you through your life? Doesn't mean you're going to have an easy life. Doesn't mean you won't face challenges, but there's an authenticity inside of you that you can connect to. It's something very, very special. And when you connect to that, there's a deep inner peace from that connection. It doesn't make you better than other people because you recognize that in other people. And then you feel empathy and love and support and for other people. And that's a wonderful thing to point your children towards. But how many parents do that? Almost none. Why? Because very few people have that realization themselves. And if you don't have that realization, how can you guide your children towards this? If you're chaotic, how can you bring peace to your children? I don't know.
Yeah, absolutely. And Paul, you've touched on the spirituality of success. And I'd love to ask you this question. If you were talking to someone, let's say you even meet someone in Dublin, you know, in that business suit, and they're stuck in their 9-to-5, they're feeling tired of the system, and they want to go down an entrepreneurial journey, right? Maybe they even have a spiritual side, or they have some kind of a relationship with their inner world. And this is a dangerous question I ask, but what kind of advice would you give them? And if not advice, what kind of question would you invite them to ask themselves, or a reflection or accommodation, or maybe even a book? Like, what comes to mind when I ask you that?
whatever path you're walking is the right path for you, even if at that point in time it doesn't feel like it's the right path for you. So, and that, by the way, that doesn't mean you have to stay on that path. But in that moment, you're in the right place. So I think if you start with that. Now, certainly when I was in business and I was extremely stressed, I had a habit of, there's a park near my office, and I would regularly, when I got very stressed, get in my car and drive around to this park and meditate. And people into the back of my car, and they go, why do you have a blanket in your car? Because I always have a blanket in the car, because that's my meditation blanket. And so even in those days when I was very heavily engaged in business, I was meditating all the time. So in the craziness, I was connecting to that. So I would first ask people not to fight with where they are, to find some peace with the struggle they're in at the moment, to surrender to that almost. If that's a job you hate, you're in at 9 to 5, just surrender to that, because whether you like or not, it's where you are now. So be where you are now. And the second thing is, then pursue meditation and pursue journaling and pursue things that will grow your inner world. And from that pursuit, begin to investigate where you might like to go, what road you might like to walk. And people talk about overnight successes, and people want, you know, the quick panacea of how they can go from zero to millionaire and zero to freedom overnight. I'm not saying that doesn't exist. I'm just saying I can't help you with it, because that wasn't my road. It took me decades to get where I am. And also, and I know lots of very successful and wealthy people. I know nobody who got there quickly. I know nobody who didn't have their years of struggle and hard work. So maybe that's just the road. It's just part of it. So, you know, the walk the road you're on, spend plenty of time in meditation and, you know, journaling, connecting and understanding yourself, and then decide what's one small thing I can do to begin to move towards the life I live. And if every day you do one small thing, I know it sounds trite, but it's also incredibly powerful. Keep connected with yourself and always be doing small things that you can move forward on.
Yeah, wonderful. Well, we're coming up to an hour now, and I just want to turn to the listeners here. Zaki, Josh, Pamela, and Chuck, thank you for joining us. If any of you would like to come up and ask a question to Paul, you're really welcome to request the mic. You can also leave your question in the comment section at the bottom right. And either way, we're really grateful for your presence. And one question I had for you, Paul, is what's your relationship been like with nature and the landscape? Because, you know, you mentioning Ireland, I was thinking a lot about John O'Donohue, and I really enjoyed the spiritual quality in his poetry and how he writes also about the landscape of Ireland. And has that played a role in your spiritual journey?
I've always wanted to live in the countryside. I grew up in the city, but always wanted to live in the countryside. And in fact, 20 years ago this week, I moved into the home we're living in now. And we're about 45 minutes outside of the city, and we live in a small village. And as I'm standing here talking to you, if I turn to my left, I'm looking out over a valley, beautiful green valley. And if I look straight ahead, I see the valley, and I look out to the Irish Sea. I get to see the ocean. So it means a lot to me to live in this quiet place. It means a lot to me, particularly my busy days, for my gates to open, for my entry driveway, and for them to close behind me, and to me to be in my own quiet space. And certainly if I want, so I live very much, overlooking a small village, but I live in the countryside. I'm very close to the ocean, and it's very easy for, I'm a keen cyclist, and it's very easy for me just to get into country roads. So I do love cities. I love visiting cities and traveling, but I love to live in nature, and I love to live in the countryside. And I find it easier to find peace and quiet when I do. I suppose one should be able to bring your peace no matter where you are. But certainly I'm very nourished, I would say, by where I live and by being able to spend a lot of time here.
Yeah, it's definitely very conducive to contemplation and silence, which ultimately for me silence is one of the greatest teachers. And that's something that's really hard to find in a city. I mean, I lived in London for 6 years myself, and it's definitely a spiritual quest, you know, to meditate there and to stay connected. But yeah, after a while, I feel the system needs to...
I love the cities. I have a son living in London. I go to New York often enough. We're traveling over for a few days to Amsterdam next week, and I love to... But I like dropping into cities and spending a couple of days there, and then retreating home to the countryside.
Yeah, definitely, like a refuge. And yeah, Paul, I'd love to bring it all together and you know, slowly move towards wrapping the space up. And first of all, I'd love to hear how this was for you, as I know this was your first time doing a space, and also just ask you if there's anything else that you'd like to share with the audience today or ask of them or anything else that comes to mind.
Well, I've enjoyed it because we're talking about subjects that are very close to my heart, I'm very passionate about, so I'm always willing to talk about it, and I certainly learn a lot from the conversations, because it gets me to think. I would close up by saying, you mentioned earlier about this conflict people may have between the life of an entrepreneur and the spiritual life, and that was something I struggled with in my 30s, and I struggled with for a long time. And at one time I would think I need to go off and meditate in the mountains and just be quiet and meditate all day, and then at the next time I would think, no, I want to be successful, I want to build a business. And I would lean from one to the other, and then one afternoon I went for a walk in a park near my office, and I was really struggling with this idea, which path do I choose. And as I was walking through the park, they have this enormous flagpole in the park, and I saw this beautiful flagpole, a beautiful flag on top of it, and I noticed that the strength of the flagpole was supported by these opposing rods, so either side of the flagpole was a rod pulling it to the opposite side, and that force either side, one pulling it to the left, one pulling it to the right, in the center point was what kept the flagpole standing still in the wind. And I recognized that. I said, that's me, I'm the flagpole. And on one side I have this huge desire to build personal wealth, which I have to, hands up, yes, I have a desire to build personal wealth, and I have a desire to have nice things, and you know what, that doesn't seem like spiritual, but it's me, so I'm going to own up to it. And the other side, I have this huge desire to pursue a spiritual path, to reflect, to meditate, to study from spiritual teachers. And I realized I was a flagpole, that both of those pulling both sides of me made me the person I am. And so in that moment, I just came to peace with myself and realized I will pursue growing my wealth, and I will pursue growing myself, because both of those paths lead me to being most authentically who I am. So I think it's the one journey. It's not two paths at all. And you can be spiritual and be wealthy. You can be spiritual and you can be anything as long as you're being yourself. Why not?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, ultimately, there is no separation. And for me, I mean, as you mentioned, being attached to having no few possessions can be as strong of an attachment as to possessing things, right? Like also getting too attached to the spiritual truth or a spiritual path, you know, kind of rejecting materialism can be just the same attachment in a way, ironically. And I remember there's a beautiful Indian story, I think it was about King Janaka, that went something like, he was studying with a spiritual master, and you know, he was going and seeing him like an ordinary seeker. But one day when he was visiting the master, somebody set a fire to his palace, and the fire was raging out of control. And so other seekers who rejected the material world and possessions, they were studying with the master, and they were poorer than the poorest. They only had loincloths and the simple necessities. And they all left the master's presence and ran to save what little they possessed when the fire was raging, while the king, Janaka, stayed with the master. And the master asked him, Well, why were you not concerned about saving your palace and all your precious possessions? And the king replied, I have come here to acquire God realization. Do I need those things? And so the other so-called seekers, they had to come to learn from the master. They all went back to save their loincloths, like the little that they had, because they were attached to them. And they stood to, but the king, he stood to lose everything and so much, but only praying to God and thinking of God was, you know, what he was interested in. Mm-hmm. And you know, and the story goes, of course, he attained self-realization and so on and so forth. And I think that's a beautiful story to demonstrate. It's not about how much you have or how little you have, but how attached you are to it and how grateful you are to what you have. And
I think it also comes to, I mean, there's so many different teachings, so many different gurus, and I will listen to any of them and I will reject any of them if it's not convenient to me. The only path I'm here to follow is my own path, is to follow the life I'm drawn to live. And some people may like that, some people may not, all of which is irrelevant. I'm just here to be me, however that conflicts or anyone. And I enjoy, I love meditation and I love spiritual conversation, the spiritual path. And when I get in an airplane, I like sitting in business class. And to some people, those things may be appalling and they may be materialistic. Oh, that's fine. It's just me. And I'm not looking for anyone's approval or anyone's rejection. I'm just really encouraging everyone to be themselves, however that expresses. And that's what I'm going to do. So that's the way it is.
Yeah, exactly. There's no right or wrong, right?
No, it's just being yourself. Well, to me, it's just being yourself, you know.
Exactly, yeah. Well, Paul, this has been an incredible conversation. I'm really grateful for your time, for your presence, for sharing about your journey, your insights today. And I'm inspired by your sense of freedom and your sense of sovereignty and choosing what you want out of life, what's important to you and how you live it. And yeah, it fills me with joy to also see you spreading the message through your writing. And I'm excited to see you more in spaces like this and listen to your podcast. So again, thank you for coming on here today.
Well, Nick, thank you for the invitation. It's been great fun. I really enjoyed it. And yeah, it was a good way to spend the afternoon. So thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. And to all the listeners, thank you for tuning in. And yeah, wishing everyone a beautiful day, evening, morning, wherever you are. And see you all soon.
Thank you. Take care.
If you enjoyed this episode, please do subscribe, share on social media, tell all your friends about it, or leave a comment. It helps us grow the show and share our message. Thanks again for listening and see you on the next episode of The Inner Entrepreneur. Take care.